Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
It's time to talk football with the professor, John Clayton. You guys have questions for John. All you need to do is text those questions in. 206-421-3776. That's 421-ESPN. And we will try to get to some of your questions before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Well, what did you we saw a post today that already there's been surgery on Trey Brown's leg.
Yeah.
He posted a surgery went well, and it's sort of like from the thighs down. All you see are his feet sticking out. Looks like he's in the back seat of a car or something.
Mm-hmm.
But a big old brace on that leg. So as goofy as Pete answered that question, I think it's pretty certain he's done for the year.
Oh, right? Yeah. It's a 6-7 month recovery on that type of surgery. So it's like...
Did they say exactly... Did we get details on
patellar tendon.
Torn patellar tendon?
Yeah.
Mm.
I wonder if it was torn all the way through or if it was like a partial tear. I guess it doesn't matter. That one's a big one, right, John? I mean, that's up there with ACL.
Yeah, it is. I mean, isn't that what...
That's what Jimmy Graham had.
Jimmy Graham got, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the biggest tendon in your body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so do you see that? I mean, you know, we went from worrying about the cornerbacks to once they got Reed and Brown in there for a couple weeks, we're like, oh, wow, we can relax. They're playing really well. And now Reed's dealing with injuries. Brown is out. We could be looking at Sidney Jones and Bless Austin. So should we be concerned again?
Yes, without question. Because, again, it's like... You know, Brown was playing so well. Reed was their best cornerback. We don't know if Reed's going to be able to play this week in Washington. You know, we'll see how practice goes tomorrow to get an early idea. But right now, I think it's got to be very scary. Because, again, what happens if they get one more injury? Then it's Ugo Amadi moving out to the outside.
Gavin Heslop and Reed. The other Reed, was it John Reed?
John Reed, yeah.
The guy from Houston?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess that's who you'd be looking at.
Well, what are we looking at as far as, do you know, John, DJ, like how long?
We don't know. I mean, again, they haven't practiced.
Yeah. Yeah. It's too bad because they had that set and,
yeah.
You know, it's a shame. But, yeah, it's – and, John, you were telling me, I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago, and I can't remember, where the – as far as missed starts, and
mm-hmm.
you have that charted, and it just felt to me like – and maybe it's just because we're paying so much attention here, but it just felt like the Seahawks would be high on that list when they're really not, right?
They're not, no. I mean, they're less than 20 because, again, you've got Chris Carson, obviously, you know, missing six games. Then you have, Brandon Schell missing a couple games, and you have Damian Lewis missing a couple games. But other than that, now you start adding Trey Brown and all that stuff. They've not had a lot of injuries. Where you look at, Baltimore, for example, as far as missed starts, and again, when I do missed starts, I don't double do them. In other words, if your left tackle like Ronnie Stanley in Baltimore gets hurt and then his replacement gets hurt, I'm not double counting that. I count the ones for the starters, and that's it. And so they've got 78 missed starts, and they're, 10 weeks into the season.
Okay, so I think we're probably looking at people like Ben Burkervin, Marquise Blair, Cody Barton has missed time.
Yeah, but again, they're not starters.
Right. I think, but that's what makes it feel worse,
is that we're
talking about those guys and we're saying, oh, man, he's done for the season. Blair's done for the season. Barton's out for a couple weeks. So it feels like it's worse, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But it's not bad because, again, I mean, you know, the starters are the starters and, the backups are the backups. And so certainly you want to have enough backups to be able to fill in when the starters start getting hurt. But, no, this team hasn't been in pretty good shape as far as not having a lot of missed starts.
Hey, Lefko asked an interesting question in one of our teases. And, it pains me to think that the Seahawks are viewed this way. But we've always talked about trap games, which I don't think you buy into. Do you buy into those trap
games?
You do.
You do.
Okay. I'm not a big believer in that. But either way. Do you think the Seahawks are now viewed as a trap game for teams? Have they fallen that far this year?
Probably, yeah. I mean, Washington, as bad as they were a couple weeks ago, is probably looking at it as a trap game. You know, they've won a couple games and, played better football. Their record isn't great, but again, I think they're probably looking at this as a trap game.
Mm. Hey, John, the Joe Judge and the Giants, they fire Jason Garrett and promote Freddie Kitchens. Has that been in the works? For a while now?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's just a desperation move after a bad Monday night performance. And, you know, you don't see much improvement in Daniel Jones. And so they went the different direction. But the problem is, you know, Freddie Kitchens, you know, having watched him on the Cleveland sidelines when he was, running things for the Cleveland Browns, he's one of the worst coaches I've seen. He's terrible, and particularly, you know, calling plays. He's awful. And, I mean, I used to I watched in that game how, you know, some of the guys would come over and start yelling at him for what they don't like and all that stuff. And so I just look at it as a typical Bill Belichick former coach that that now has a head coaching job, just trying to do something to shake things up to make it look like he's going to save his job.
Text coming in again. If you guys have questions for John, you can text those in 206-421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Now, I didn't see this from Larry Stone, but they're referencing, 509 says, Professor, is it a fair point or overreaction with Larry Stone's declaration it's the end of the Pete and Russell era?
Overreaction. I mean, I think that it's not the end. I mean, last year they won 12 games. And, you know, they were certainly thinking Super Bowl this year, but things haven't worked out. And, of course, you lose your quarterback. And, of course, he's still not at 100%, it looks like, you know, throwing the football. So, no, I think it's a complete overreaction. I mean, you know, that's you know, one of those, you know, obviously a columnist is going to be as bold as they possibly can. You know, obviously this one's going to get a lot of clicks, but I don't see it being the end.
Well, it's kind of interesting. We were listening to some audio, and you had Tyler Lockett saying one thing, at least seemingly, and then Russell Wilson. So Tyler was basically saying, you know, do we have those clips? Maybe we can play them for the professor. It's kind of like, you know, there's three in a row that, like, everybody's thinking differently.
This is Tyler, followed by Russell, followed by Pete, and they're all talking about the same thing. Here you go. Here's Tyler.
Honestly, man, like, all these teams is not playing what they play on film. Like, they're literally not. So it's hard to be able to get ready because you don't know what you're going to get. Every time you go against a team, they might play all man-to-man, you know, their whole entire 7-8 games, and then they turn around and play us, and they don't play man once. You know, when you're looking at what teams are doing consistently week in and week out, nobody's doing that against us.
I wouldn't say that, no. I think it's a little different. I think they didn't do anything surprising, to be honest with you. They play, you know, three, they play four, they play six, they play two, some every once in a while. They play a good amount of match man. Typical NFL football. They didn't do anything that was alarming or anything like that. I think that, I think that for us, we just didn't execute on making plays.
Well, you're assuming that he's right, you know, and I didn't hear his comments, so I don't know what he said, so I'm not going to comment about that. But we've often seen teams over the years play us differently, you know, than they've played other teams because of the makeup of the QB, his mobility and all that. They, you know, they try to find a way to see if they can counter that, and that's always been kind of the case. So that's nothing new for us at all.
There you go, John. You got Tyler saying, the way they're playing us in person is not what we're watching on film. And then Russell saying, nah, they're not doing it. They're doing a 2-3, a 6, a match man. And then Pete going, well, in reference to Tyler's comments, you're assuming he's right. Mm-hmm. And he's saying he didn't hear what Tyler said. But doesn't that just kind of speak to the way this offense is played?
Yeah.
You've got guys going in different directions, and it seems like they're pretty clear about it. No, they're doing this. No, they didn't do that.
Yeah. I mean, just get the feeling that there's just and it started last year in the second half of the season, you know, a little bit more cover two than man to man, because, you know, it's like, certain teams are going to play man to man and match things up. But I think more teams, you know, are trying to do cover two because it limits some of the things that you can do with Tyler Lockett and by, DK Metcalf.
All right. The thing is, I'm going with Russell on that one, you know, because Russ is the guy that would know.
He studies.
And I'm not saying Tyler doesn't study, but even if Tyler is right, okay, they're playing man instead of zone. You've seen it before.
Yeah.
It's not like this is a mystery to you. So, and, you know, I was saying earlier, John, that every game I ever went into, there was always something I hadn't seen. There was always a surprise. There was always a wrinkle. But at one point, you know, the coaches, they run home to mama, right? They do what they do best. They revert to that. So, yeah, I just don't see how it can be that confusing. So it's just weird to talk about, John. We were talking about how the game got flexed with the 49ers.
Right.
You know, and if you'd have told us that like 5-6 years ago, you'd have said you're crazy. And here they are. So it's pretty it's a strange year to evaluate. It's just it's kind of hard to get a grasp on what's wrong.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, you can see that, you know, because they have to do these a couple weeks in advance. So what they're doing is that they basically said, do we want a 3-7 team on a night game Sunday night? You know, even though what this team has, you know, in the process now getting their fourth night game. And so they said, nope, we don't want to do it because of what they've been on NBC, what, twice, I think, with Sunday Night Football or whatever. And so, yeah, it's just very different.
425 John says, John, how would you evaluate Shane Waldron at this point? He was brought in for a more creative run game, more tempo, and a better intermediate pass game, and so far it hasn't really shown up.
Well, he's only had four games with Chris Carson, right? He's had you know, the missed games with Russell Wilson, and you know, it's like I think he's doing okay. I mean, he's not doing great, but I don't think it's as bad. Because again, you know, again, this is the continued overreaction of this town. Fire Pete Carroll. Get rid of Shane Waldron. What about, oh, we got to get rid of Ken Norton Jr.? It's like, come on. I mean, it's like, just deal with it. It's an off season, and maybe they can turn it around. Maybe they won't. But again, you're going to just blow everything up. I don't think so.
So what do you think happens? Let's say they don't turn it around and the last seven go poorly. What do you think happens in the offseason?
Well, I mean, obviously you got to do some rebuilding with the talent base because they got so many unrestricted free agents that are starters that they could lose, particularly three on the offensive line. And, you know, I think that, you know, Russell likes Shane Waldron. And so it's like if you get rid of Shane Waldron and you don't know what you're going to get in return, it's like, you know, then do we have, you know, our favorite Mark Rogers now starting to call up Colin Cowart and starting to, you know, say, well, look at how bad this is now. It's like this. He wants out and all this stuff. It's like, come on.
Hey, John, 206, now that the Broncos have their wide receiver trio, is it a good landing place for Aaron Rodgers?
Yes.
In Denver?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, again, I think they have the cap room to be able to do what's necessary. Certainly you can see that George Payton is very aggressive, and you know they, and so now it's like you know, here's Aaron Rodgers, who's complained about not having enough receivers other than Davante Adams, and now here's a team that's overdone it, because technically if you put KJ Hamler in there, they're four deep at the wide receiver position, and they have Noah Fant. And, you know, of course, Hamler is coming off the ACL surgery, so he's not going to be there the rest of the season. But, you know, Jerry Jeudy is one of the best young receivers in football. And now they got Cortland Sutton signed for, you know, $15.2 million. And, you know, they've got a little over $10 million tied up in Tim Patrick. And the great part is Patrick and Cortland Sutton don't drop balls. I think they've gone through the entire season. I know Sutton's gone a couple seasons, and he's not dropped a pass.
Wow. John, what do you make of the Lions? I mean, obviously they're losing.
They stink.
Well, but I got to give them credit. They're, you know, with a couple of exceptions, they don't get their butt kicked. They're in these games. I mean, they fight too. They tied with the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
They lose 13-10 to Cleveland. They lose 19-17 to Minnesota. They lose 19-17 to Baltimore. I mean, this is a team that seems like they play – considering their lack of talent, that they're in it, they're not getting walked over every week, I guess is my point. And it sounds like, I was listening to somebody on NFL Network this morning, mm-hmm, talking about how the players love Campbell.
Yeah.
They're ready to run through a wall for this guy.
Yeah, or, you know, have their knee bitten off by him.
Well, that too, but I mean, it's...
No, that's for the other guys.
Do you think with them playing this way that leads to a quicker turnaround if they get the right amount of talent in here?
No, I don't see it.
All right.
They're just so far down as far as talent. I mean, you can coach them up and you can be somewhat competitive, but again, if you're not going to have the talent, you know, you don't know how much more talent they're going to lose, because they can definitely lose some more guys, and you know, probably will. So no, I think it's going to take 3-4 years for them to be competitive.
Hey, by the way, on the other side of that most recent loss was the Cleveland Browns. The Browns win the game, but they're out there being booed, and Baker Mayfield being booed. And he had some comments after the game. I'm paraphrasing because I don't have them in front of me, but basically they asked him what he thought about the home fans booing him, and he was like, I don't care. Those are probably the same people that are out there cheering when we're trying to call a play on offense, you know, which I thought was kind of funny. I give him a little credit. The guy's taped together. I mean, he's got multiple injuries. He's hobbling around out there, you know, trying to gut it out, and he's out there being booed by the home fans. Do you think that was a mistake for him to speak up that way, or what do you make of his comments?
Remember, he didn't say anything after the game.
Right.
He avoided the press conference. He came. That was on Monday when he came back and talked.
Right.
And so it's like he had a day to reflect on it and everything else. But, you know, I think that, you know, he's what he is average. I mean, he's a good complementary type quarterback that if you surround him with great players and skilled position players, then he has a chance to win. If you don't, he's not going to win.
Hey, John, let's see. This is the 253. Is there something in the NFL that grades officials publicly, is their question. It seems like the officials have missed on more calls against the Seahawks this year than usual. As far as the grading goes, it's nothing public, right?
No, it's not public.
So, but we do get an indication, like, what? How do they penalize the umpires or the officials? Do they take them off a certain?
Yeah, if you don't get good grades, I mean the ones with the good grades gets to go into the playoffs, and the ones with the best grades get to go to the Super Bowl. If your grades are bad, you don't get the playoff games, and you definitely don't get the Super Bowl.
Okay, I wonder if they're also sending them to teams that stink.
games that nobody wants to do.
That way, less attention.
No, but again, it's like I think it's been an off year. There's no question about it. And of course, what I don't like is the taunting rule and how they're standing by that, and the inconsistencies. I mean, you know, here's Sean Payton, who was on the competition committee, and with the inconsistencies that he's seeing officiating wise and the taunting rule and everything else, he just said, "I'm off the competition committee. That's it."
Hey, did you see that story this morning about Matt Nagy? The word was he was being fired, and then he was out there going, "That's not true." You know, that he said that's not accurate. You know, there were reports. Did you see the reports that he had been released or
no,
been fired?
I mean, no, the story was, and it's ironic because, I mean, this isn't, I don't know if this guy's a sports writer or whatever it is, but he's actually won a Pulitzer Prize. And so, you know, he said that they've told him that he'll be fired on Monday. Now, again, I don't know of any circumstance.
This coming Monday.
Yeah, this coming Monday. Of any circumstance that you have a coach go into a game and they're telling you you're going to be fired, you know, three, 4 days after the game. I've never heard of that, but, you know, we'll see. But there's no doubt Matt Nagy's in deep trouble. They're on a 6-game losing streak. You know, his play calling has been horrible. Justin Fields ended up getting hurt because of the bad offensive line. He's got a rib injury. Andy Dalton's now back to starting. And everything is just – and now their defense is falling apart.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I think we all kind of agreed on this with the five quarterbacks that were taken, including including Trevor Lawrence, that I think there was a number of us that said Mac Jones. We thought, but just because of Belichick, and that's playing out, right?
Oh, yeah, and of course, I mean, and Belichick's former assistant coach, the Satanator, you know, Nick Saban, you know, Coach Satan, and
wait, what did you call him?
Coach Satan.
Coach Satan.
No, the Satanator? Is that what
Satanator,
you said?
Yeah.
I've never heard that. Did you make that up, or is that what people
call
him?
No, it's been brought about for many years.
I don't think I've heard that one.
People think he's evil, Joe?
Yeah.
Saban.
But let's put it this way. He can be evil, but you have to rate, you know, Bill Belichick is the greatest coach in NFL history, and Saban is one of the greatest coaches in college history. I mean, they're that good. And so certainly you can see that.
And they're both spawns of Satan.
Yeah, well, I guess you could say that. But no, it's like, Coach Satan is, he's really phenomenal in what he's been able to do. And, you know, it was funny because, you know, that's where everybody was all confused, because everybody thought that when they traded up San Francisco that they were going to take Mac Jones. And there's no doubt that Kyle liked Mac Jones, but then he switched off and, you know, liked Trey Lance better. And there's no doubt that Trey Lance is, I think, is going to be a very talented, good quarterback. But right now, I mean, you've got Mac Jones, you know, leading this Patriot team now over the Buffalo Bills in the division. They're 7-4, and the Bills are 6-4.
That's unbelievable what the Bills, what they've gone through. I mean, they look so good early on.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what, the story seems to be that, because I know I just had to do this for the Washington Post, the story seems to be that basically they figured out their offense. And, you know, they pass the ball, like last year, 37-plus times a game. This year they're throwing it 38 times a game. And I think that the fact that they're not making adjustments in the way that they're throwing the ball is causing them all kind of problems, and now it's catching up to them. So they've got to figure out, you know, to get a little bit more running, or they got to figure out something different because it's not working.
John, the 206 wants to know, what is your favorite Christmas movie?
That's a great question to ask, 206,
yeah,
before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's like I haven't thought that far ahead. It's like,
well, but it's that time of year.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, best thing.
Yeah, I think that's, I like that one.
I'd go Christmas Story. But
oh, Christmas Stories.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, I got to say, It's a Wonderful Life, Jimmy Stewart.
Phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Miracle on 34th Street, original.
Right.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, those are good.
And then one more. John, apple pie or pumpkin pie?
Damn it. That was
my favorite. It'll be pumpkin pie for Thanksgiving, and then apple pie a little bit later. But again, I'm not a dessert person, so a big dessert person. So it's like, doesn't matter. I'll pass on both.
Wait, you like your Mike and Ike's, right?
I do. Yeah, they're great.
That's one thing. I don't know if you remember when Pat was in the hospital, and I brought you lunch, and I put a little box of Mike and Ike's in there.
Yeah.
Just Clayton and stuff. It's the only sweet thing you eat, right? Pretty much?
Pretty much, yeah.
If you like those, maybe he'd like Jelly Bellies.
Yeah, how about Jelly Bellies?
Jelly Bellies are good, yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, jelly beans.
Well, yeah. That's what they are.
Well, yeah. they're fancier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ask Lefko about it. He'll give you like a 45-minute dissertation on the
jelly bellies.
Mike and I probably talk about Jelly Bellies half the time.
Yeah, we talk sports half the time, and then I listen to these two debate flavors of Jelly Bellies the other half of the time. It's good. John, we appreciate it. We'll talk tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, usually the saying is it's all downhill from here. That implies a good thing. But it's been the opposite for the Seahawks, and we'll explain why. Coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at 5 o'clock, our player spotlight will feature cornerback Gavin Heslop, and then immediately following him, El Hombre, Michael Bradley. So stay tuned for all of that coming up, but as we talked about in the tease, usually when you hear it's all downhill from here, that implies, hey, whew, don't have to work anymore. We're going to coast downhill. We pedaled all the way up, and now things get easier.
Okay.
But is it
I think of it the other way.
Do you?
Yeah. It's all downhill. Once you get over age 50,
well, yeah,
it's all downhill from here.
But usually, I guess it's the tone you use it with. Like, man, it's all downhill from here. Yeah, like, man, gravy. I worked hard. I'm pedaling up this hill. I've been exerting myself, and now I can coast.
All right.
But you're right. It does have a kind of a double meaning. But as it relates to the Seahawks, it's what you were saying. Like, it's all downhill from here because this is you know, Russell Wilson had his best passing game of the season against the Colts. We talked about that to start the show, and that was before we found out those games don't count. And then you know, they were their most efficient on third down. They were 4 of 9 in that game. The offensive balance we talked about. I mean, the tight ends had 5 targets, 5 catches between the two of them, 3 to Disley, 2 to Everett. You ran the ball 27 times to 23 pass attempts. You had 4 touchdown passes. I mean, it was just really a beautiful game, Dave.
Yeah,
it really was.
Sure was.
And ever since then, it just seems like it's been a tale of two halves. They've had some good halves. They've certainly had good quarters, good drives. But really piecing together a complete game since then has not been realistic, whether we're talking about, you know, that was a good defensive effort. They held Taylor, who's just running roughshod over everybody, to, what, 56 yards on the ground and 60 yards receiving and no touchdowns. And it was just outside of that, it's been, hey, offense or defense was bad for a few weeks after that. The offense gave you a good half, then they just inexplicably shut down and give you nothing in the next half. And that hasn't changed. It just hasn't changed. And I was saying this yesterday that, you know, I think we played a peak cut about, you know, hey, we just got to get back to this. And if we do this, I'm thinking, no, this is just who you are. Do you expect some massive turnaround? Is that to me is the most far-fetched idea that all of a sudden we're just going to see a new version of this team? They're just going to be disciplined. They're going to be taking on blocks. Everybody's going to know their assignment. The communication's going to be perfect after 10 weeks. I'm thinking after 10 weeks, as Bill Parcells says, your record is you are what your record says you are. And that's, unfortunately, their talent, as we talked about individually, is there. Collectively, it's not.
Yeah, I guess I would say it's going to be much more difficult for the offense to have that kind of turnaround if you think something like that exists.
Yeah.
Because for them, it's more about the rhythm and getting in the flow and, you know, having, you know, lots of time for Russell Wilson, things like that. I feel like the defense could do it, I don't want to say instantly, but within a game. And that would just be that everybody is going to go as hard as they possibly can on every single play, and we are going to hit people. And that's, like, I don't even care if you get caught in an RPO. If you see a guard coming up, just go smash him in the mouth. And I'm talking about get behind your pads to put the crown of your helmet into his chin. And that's how you can...
Well, that's a penalty.
You can instantly, not on a block, if you're taking on a guard... You know, that's what you can do. I feel like they can do that. That's what I'm seeing missing on defense. On offense, it's a little bit more difficult because you have to get, you know, everybody has to coordinate. It's like we always talk about receivers and how they're kind of like divas, but there's so many things that have to happen in order for them to have success.
Right.
Yeah. So I feel like that's how the offense is. They're much more reliant upon each other than the defense is. The defense is like one guy can come up and have a big hit. And this is where I will say, and you asked me last week, it was a very good question, about what was KJ Wright so good at as far as the screen goes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you attack the block first and foremost, then you worry about, you know, where the running back is. And I feel like KJ is the guy that kind of, he would ignite a team in that way. Remember the play he made against Arizona against Kyler Murray?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the screens that he dismantled at Arizona in the game they lost, albeit, but still, they were good moments that you can build on. The big hit I mentioned about down in Arizona. I mean, that's the one thing I think they're missing from him, that he could provide that big play that gets everybody fired up, and then, you know, they go on a roll from there. That's, to me, what needs to happen defensively.
If you're talking about guys all of a sudden, though, putting that helmet into the chin or the chest of that guard and doing those things, and it sounds simple enough, but if a guy hasn't been playing that way this year, last year, previous, if it's just not who they are anymore, or maybe ever were, but if it's just not the way they play, what's the realistic expectation that all of a sudden that switch is going to be flipped and they're going to go, you know what, I'm going to start hitting people? I mean, I think you're setting yourself up for disappointment if you expect to see it.
Yeah, well, it depends on who it is. I mean, I think you can get Jordan Brooks to do it. You know,
yeah.
I think as a young guy, and he's really good at that. I mean, he's a hitter. Yeah, there's a play against San Francisco where they run like a lead play, and Kyle Juszczyk or Juszczyk. comes and tries to block Jordan Brooks, and Jordan Brooks meets him in the backfield. Like, he just goes straight downhill, and you can hear the crack of the pads and everything, turns it back in, and the other linebacker, don't remember who it was playing it soft and kind of backing up, and then it ended up being a 5-yard tackle downfield. So, yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah, but he registered a tackle.
You have to, you know, have everybody doing that playing that way. So, yeah, it's... I think Jamal Adams can maybe get that kind of fired up thing, but
he's a hitter. Quandre Diggs is a hitter.
Definitely Quandre.
Brooks, to Brooks's credit, I don't know if I think it was after the Green Bay game. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. He had made the statement that, you know, he was talking about KJ and screens and saying, I'm going to watch film on what he did and maybe I'll call him. They're talking about calling him, and it, you know, which I thought was pretty cool for a young guy to sort of defer to, you know what, man, he did do that. He did play that one. And I don't know what led to that answer. I don't know what the question was that he was asked, but he had talked about A, watching film of KJ and how he handled screens, and B, maybe even calling him and talking to him about it.
Yeah.
By the way, have you heard anything about how he's playing in Oakland?
I really haven't.
I keep forgetting to ask John about that, but I haven't really heard much about what's happening in Oakland with him.
Yeah, I've just looked at his stats, but I don't hear, you know, what the word is. Every once in a while, you'll get like a text, and, oh, wish we had that play, and it'll be because of, you know, KJ Wright. So, yeah, but getting back to the Colts, they are not a bad team at all. This is a very good team. You know, they have 25 takeaways.
Yeah.
25 takeaways already. I mean, I always talk about 2019. The Seahawks had 32 in the season. 25, and they're a little bit more than halfway there. I'm not sure if they've had their bye week, but still, well, either way, they're over. But that's pretty amazing that, you know, their defense has taken the ball away that much. And I'm looking at KJ right now. He doesn't have any sacks, but, you know, he's got some tackles and, you know, no big plays really, but he's only started two games. So, yeah, he had three tackles in one and four in the other, five tackles in another one, couple tackles for loss. So, yeah, I thought they were set. I really did. I didn't really think that he was going to – that they were going to miss him that much. But I would just say for sure, the way they're running their defense right now, I don't think he would fit in. He doesn't fit in their new defense. He'd be one of those guys that is either rushing the edge and then dropping back every once in a while. And it doesn't really fit him. Plus, they're in nickel so much that there's only two linebackers on, and that's going to be Bobby and Brooks.
Brooks and Bobby, yeah. And by the way, apparently I said Oakland. My bad. Las Vegas.
You said Oakland? I didn't notice it.
Apparently I did.
Sounded good to me, Bob.
My bad. Sorry.
Was Oakland playing San Diego Chargers?
It's a heck of a matchup. You always keep your eye on Oakland and San Diego when they get together. That's fireworks right there. All right. Well, boy. It's just,
yeah, these are tough conversations.
They are, man.
Surprising.
They are, man. And we'll talk more about what's in front of them tomorrow, because we don't have a show on Monday. It's Monday Night Football. We'll kind of preview the Washington game tomorrow, since it's Thanksgiving and we don't have shows Thursday or Friday. But I'll just say right now, I don't feel great about that game either. I don't know which game you go into going, oh, well, they got this. Based on how they played, which one do you go, they got it?
Somebody asked me today, like, are the Seahawks going to win another game? I'm like, well, they have Houston at Houston.
Houston just beat Tennessee.
Yeah. In Tennessee.
Yes.
And you got the Detroit Lions.
Who are kind of just, you know, they're just barely losing. They're not getting their butts kicked. I mean, they have a couple times, but, man, they look like they could come up and bite you right in the kneecap, Dave, if you're not careful.
That's right.
All right. Who will be the University of Washington starting quarterback for the Apple Cup? We're going to hear about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Interim head coach Bob Gregory getting UW ready for the Apple Cup. And, you know, he could have just come out and said, sure, Sam Huard will start. I'll get some excitement. But no, he tries to be funny and then just doesn't really reveal anything about who's starting on Friday.
I could, but I have to kill you. So, no, there's no, not going to divulge no injuries, no quarterback updates. So you guys are probably done, right?
I could, but I'd have to kill you. Is that still funny? Apparently it was there. I heard a lot of chuckles there.
Those are fake, right? That was just...
Yeah, those are courtesy laughs. I mean, come on, man. How old is that saying? That's before we were born.
I mean, thought it was funny.
That's hilarious.
And the fact that I think it's funny makes Lefko...
Yeah, he's cracking up back there. I guess at this point, I don't know. I mean, Sam Huard, I'm looking at his numbers right now. He's had 11 pass attempts on the season. Which of these two quarter? And I'm not making the case that Dylan Morris has been great. He most certainly has not. And I don't know how much of it is his fault versus the scheme's fault, the coordinator they fired. I think it's a combination of both. Which of these two give you the better chance of beating the Cougs? I would say it would probably be Dylan Morris at this point, wouldn't it? Just based on his experience.
Yeah, I would say so.
Nothing against Sam Huard. I'm just if your goal is to win the game and really pull the upset and ruin a season for the Cougs out there, which quarterback gives you the better opportunity?
Yeah, I'm not sure about putting the young fella in there, but I sure love Sam Huard. He sure is a nice kid. His parents did a really good job with him. Ran into him when Brock did his football camp during the pandemic. We did it over in Brock's backyard when he still lived here. Did I tell you the story about him throwing the football through the hoop? He was like maybe 30 yards away, 30
that Sam did or Brock did?
25 yards. Yeah, the kid. He threw one and it went off the square. And then he dropped the next two.
Just really?
A pass, throwing it into a basketball.
Swish hoop. Or was he off the backboard?
No, he was. It went through clean. I don't know about a swish, but
wow.
It went through. I mean, he he's a very talented kid. So, but I don't know. Do you throw him out there in a game like this and see, is this going to, I don't want to say ruin him. I mean, this is the last game the Huskies are going to play in.
Yeah.
And why not? Give it a shot. I would love to see it, but I'm not sure if developmentally that would be the best thing for him. I could tell you, Mike, but then I'd have to kill you.
Yeah, then we couldn't do the next one.
That's how I really think.
Here's my fake chuckle.
I'm outnumbered.
terrible football game last night. Perfect for Manning Cast, though. Giants, Bucks, and Julian Edelman might have stolen the show with his impression of Gronk and Brady on the sideline.
I guarantee Gronk saying, like, yo, Tom, like, I don't think I'm, like, quite ready. Like, my lungs hurt a little bit. I need, like, two more days of practice, and I'll be there, babe. And Gronk and Tom's probably looking at him like, babe, I thought you did well today, you know, we got to keep it going. We got to get better. You know, like, I could have got you on that one, but then I didn't get you on there. But, babe, you looked great. Tom's, like, the ultimate confidence guy for old Gronk. So, but that's probably the extent of it.
A lot of babes?
A lot of babes.
I like how you
really.
Yeah, he kept saying, "Babe." He was like, "Hey, a couple more weeks, babe. I'll be there." I like how he makes him the big dumb oaf, and then Tom's like, "Hey, you're gonna be fine, man. Don't worry about it, babe." But it's a lot of babes being thrown around out there.
You know what? I feel like you could put Bob Stelton around Brady and Gronk for like 2 days, and he would do a better impersonation than Edelman, who's been around him half his life, probably.
I do like that the question was from Peyton saying, hey, what do you, because they showed them standing on the sidelines talking to each other, Gronk and Brady. He's like, what do you think they're talking about right now? And that's when he went into that. I just love it.
Pretty funny.
Babe? Did you say babe? Yeah, a lot of babes being thrown around.
That would be fun to. That's what this broadcast kind of brings you into the mind of guys like that. Like, wouldn't you love to be sitting there hearing the conversation between Brady and Gronk?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and you're hearing now, you know, the conversation between these two great quarterbacks and then the guests and everything. I taped it. I'm probably going to watch it tonight because I want to see the Kevin Hart part.
Yeah.
But you said this before, Bob, and you're absolutely right. They got to fix the timing on the audio.
The delay. There's a delay when they have a guest.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, you have enough technology. It's ESPN. It's got, you know, it's probably the second best crew that's working. Why is there a delay? Because they're like cutting each other off.
Yeah. And there's a lot of the, well, yeah. Oh, no. Go ahead. You know, and then everybody stops talking to give the other person the room to talk. And then there's that awkward silence for a second or two, and then they all start talking again. Yeah, it's just the delay is not good. But outside of that, I love nothing better than watching Peyton watch the game, and you just see his eyes fixated, and he'll oftentimes not say anything, but he'll be pointing, he'll be looking at the screen, going,
"Yeah,"
and then he'll explain after the play, like, "Hey, E, the safety came over there. It seems like he should have gone here when they're doing that." I mean, just hearing how his mind works and how he's just looking at the game, and he's. I love that stuff. I love it. I think it's great.
Sweeping the dial.
Bob, this is what you brought up earlier to Clayton. Baker Mayfield frustrated and not having it with some of the Browns fans.
Baker, what did you make of some of the booing there in the second half from the fans?
Those are probably the same fans that won't be quiet while we're on offense and trying to operate, so don't really care.
I kind of like it. I get that probably does not play well. In Cleveland, then maybe maybe they're going to really come after. I mean, they won the game; they beat the Lions. It was nip and tuck. They beat them by a field goal, and Baker's not playing great. But by all accounts, he's got multiple injuries. You see him limping around, and he's got the torn labrum. And
yeah.
I mean, I give him credit for being a tough guy and getting out there. And I think he's wearing a big harness underneath, and
it's on his non-throwing shoulder.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But still, he's still getting hit and tackled, and. You know, I don't know. I kind of like that sort of defiance. Like, you know what? I don't care. You know, the same knuckleheads making all the noise. We're trying to make calls out there.
Well, I think also that constant pain makes you a little bit irascible, right? You don't want to, you're not putting up with much. I remember my last year in the league, I was really cranky. But I mean, I had a cracked rib. I had an ankle that was screwed up. My knee needed surgery. Yeah, it puts you in a bad mood.
And people are booing you. Like, how come you're not better? How come you didn't make that play, Wyman? Get Wyman out of there. He stinks. You know, I mean, I could see
that was an every Sunday occurrence, Bob. But
I could see that feeling of, you guys understand what it takes for me to even get on the field right now? And yeah. by all accounts, and even Clayton said it, him in this condition, whether he's, I don't know, is he 65%, 70, whatever he is better than any other option they've got.
Yeah.
And he's putting it out there, and he's a guy who's still waiting or trying to put himself in a position to make the big money, and he's still putting it out. He could shut it down and say, man, I just can't go.
It's a great point, you know, and that's the kind of guy that you want as your leader. That endears you to the city, your coaches, your teammates, and, you know, he is old school that way. I like that about him.
You see what those progressive commercials have done to me? I'm defending Baker Mayfield now.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. He was the biggest clown in the college. NFL.
He was coming out of college, first year right. in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, he was just, and he wouldn't shut up. And I remember one time he's like, yeah, you should probably shut up about this. And I'm like, the end.
Yeah, that's where it stops.
And yeah, he was, and he had a bunch of turnovers. And then, yeah, he is just, he's fought his way back. And to me, he's no longer the biggest numbnut in the league. That's Jared Goff, of course.
Yeah. Rosen's still in the league, right?
Yeah, he threw a pick six against the Patriots.
Yeah, he's with the Falcons. Every quarterback on the roster threw a pick in that game.
Yeah. I think there was two
there
pick
were,
sixes.
There were two picks from Matty Ice. Rosen threw one, and then they brought whoever their third quarterback is came in, and I think on his first pass threw a pick.
Yeah, and I think it was a pick six, too.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. All right, coming up, time for our player spotlight featuring cornerback Gavin Heslop. He'll join us, and then right after that, El Hombre, Michael Bradley. It's all coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.